Ghoulish greetings, everyone. Those tunes are courtesy of the amazing Bobby Mackey and the kick-ass Fading Point. And I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from the East Coast to the West Coast to the Sunshine Coast, from tiny village to huge city, and everything in between. It's greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Maple Valley, Washington, Spanish Fork, Utah, Vero Beach, Florida, Stratford, New Hampshire, Sentheim, France, and Springfield, Nebraska. So I just got back from being up in the mountains for a few days, and it was nice. One day it was just like pure, not snow, but you could not see the mountains in front of us at all. And that was like really neat. Then the next day it was as clear as a bell. And then today it snowed as we left. So gotta love Colorado. Something's always happening weather-wise. When I got home today, there was a package waiting for me. And it was from my dear friend, Kara. And I opened it, and it was this really awesome, kick-ass 47th anniversary Michael Myers. Gotta love Halloween. Really, really, really. He's one of my favorite villains. Love him. It was one of those glass containers that you could put whiskey in. And oh my God, I love it. I've always wanted one of those. I've seen them from time to time pop up, and I'm always like, that has my name all over it. So she definitely knows me. She's so sweet. Her and her mother and sister, they had gotten it. Apparently there was a little break in the knife area, little snafu there, but they fixed it up. They were able to fix it up, and such a wonderful surprise, and I'm just so happy. And then I got to talk to her on the phone today for a little while and thank her for that and just chat for about a good 20, 25 minutes. Gotta love that girl. She's always in my thoughts, always in my prayers. And she sleeps a lot these days, more than she's awake. But when she is awake, she is actually still making those keychains and pens and different things. And so people still interested in donating to her or buying something, and the money goes to, you know, donations for her cremation. I would really recommend checking it out. You can find her on Facebook, Kara McCoy. Just check out all the fun things that she has for sale. Truly amazing stuff. And I just want to say that I hope everybody has a kick-ass Thanksgiving. I will probably forget to say it at the end of the episode, so while it's fresh in my mind, I want to say it right now. I hope that everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving, whether they celebrate it or not, or they go to work. Hopefully you're getting that time and a half, getting some extra money in there. Or if you're just spending it alone or with family and friends. Or maybe you're one of those very dedicated people that skip Thanksgiving meal altogether, go to your favorite store and wait out in the cold to get that Black Friday special stuff. Oh my goodness, I have a few people near and dear to me who do that or used to do it. My Uncle Charlie, I don't know if he does it anymore, but he used to do it every single year. It's like kudos to people who could do that. So if you are one of those people who do that, stay warm. Bring a blanket, bring a jacket, or look online. Maybe you can find some of those things online and still have your food too. Woohoo! Or Cyber Monday, if that's still a thing. Is a Cyber Monday still a thing? Who knows? Whatever you do, I hope that it is just an amazing, phenomenal day, for sure. So today, we find ourselves at Westfield, Indiana, on a notorious property that spans 18 acres. And upon first look, your mind may think, wow, what a nice area. A large home that seems to just keep on going and going. And the backyard, Well, it's surrounded by a beautiful forest, the trees standing ever so tall and mighty and proud. But what these trees may not tell you, what these trees have seen in the past years, oh boy, it's one for the deep dark secret and skeletons in the closet book. A man, even though he has long since been dead, is forever connected to this land. Any guesses on what this name may be? Herb Baumeister. He was a man who was a husband. He was a father. He had three kiddos that looked up to him at some point. And oh yeah, he was a notorious serial killer. Herb was raised in a pretty normal household. His dad was not a drunk who beat him, and his mom did not turn a blind eye. We see, from time to time, some serial killers that were born into some pretty bad situations when it comes to home life and family. Not like it's an excuse for what they did, mind you, of course, but Herbert's family was pretty damn normal. He himself? Anything but. He oftentimes enjoyed playing with dead animals, right? If that's not a cry for help, if that's not a warning sign, I don't know what the hell is. How they got to be dead? If he killed the creatures himself? If he was just fascinated with them and he looked for them or he found them or came upon them? I don't know. Wouldn't it surprise me if he killed them, though. He also was obsessed with urine, and he would at times act out by urinating on his teacher's desks at school. Now, eventually, he would be diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, upon other issues as well. Now, Baumeister, he goes on to get married, and that marriage results in three children. Now, every time a monster's identity is revealed, my mind always goes straight to the family, the spouse, the children. Like, how horrible would that be? Really think about it. Now, I know there's some people who are like, I don't talk to my parents, I don't talk to my family, yada, 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 whatever. Okay, to each their own. I'm not one of those people. And some of you people who are listening, you're not some of those people either, I'm sure. Now, some who are listening, maybe, and that's okay. Again, to each their own. But really, think about it. Think of your mother and your father as individual people, right? Can they do something like that? Murder people. Not just one person, which is one too many, mind you, but several people. It's like these people, you know, to find out that the person that raised you, the person that you call dad or mom, you can't forget about those female serial killers, right? Could be a monster, snuffing the lives of innocent people. Now, I'm sure denial would strike. Shit, I would be like, no way. No way in hell is my mom or dad a serial killer. They made me feel better when I was hurt. They gave me their shoulder when I had to cry. They gave me presents for my birthday and holidays. They let me step on their feet when I was young and danced with me. Sadly, this would be a fake world, a means to fit in. While their victims, as their lives were being taken away and they breathed their last breath, what they saw was all too 100% real. Married life. It was not romance, bliss, and happiness for Herb and his poor wife. She would be able to count on two hands out of their 25 years of marriage how many times they, as man and wife, had sex. 6 times. That's 1 time every 4 years. Like, wow. I'm not a sex therapist and I'm not here to judge. Everybody's different. Every relationship is different. Whatever you want to do, whatever, right? Not here to judge. But you're married 25 years and you had sex a total of 6 times? That's crazy. And you have to remember that 3 of those times they conceived a child. So there you go. Now, Herbert, he began frequenting gay bars and he would pick up victims at these locations. Maybe he barely touched his wife because he was gay and he urged to be with men, leaving his wife and children at home. We saw this with John Wayne Gacy. He was a man, but he was married to a woman but very much so, he would sexually assault and murder every single one of his victims. So this is just pure speculation on my part, obviously, and I can be totally off, but what if Baumeister was in fact gay and wanted to be with these men, but then was terrified that the men would leak out his secret, oh no, this married dude to a woman is not who he says he is, or it would be found out some other way, and he just felt that he could not, would not let that happen, leave no witness behind. IndieEncyclopedia.com goes into more detail when it comes to the serial killer's life. Out of work, Baumeister spent time drinking in Indianapolis gay bars. He was arrested for a hit-and-run accident while drunk in September 1985 and for conspiracy to commit theft in March 1986. Both charges were dropped. He finally found a job at a thrift shop where he discovered an interest in retail work. Baumeister borrowed $4,000 from his mother and opened his thrift store. Just a heads up, today that $4,000 is equivalent to $10,921. Just saying. So he opens up this Save-A-Lot in 1988. The organization, cleanliness, and full stock of quality used goods distinguished Save-A-Lot from other thrift shops. In 1991, with the success of his business, Baumeister moved his family to an 18-acre ranch in Westfield, which he called Fox Hollow Farms. He also gained the confidence to open a second Save-A-Lot. However, the second store was not as successful as the first one. By the summer of 1993, employees of Baumeister noticed his increasing volatility and long periods of absence during the workday. Financial strain and lawsuits against the company for non-payment of services hampered business. As Save-A-Lot spiraled out of control, a series of macabre events occurred. Between 1992 and 1994, numerous gay men had been reported missing in the Midwest. In November 1994, Baumeister's 13-year-old son found a human skull on the Fox Hollow Farms property. Baumeister claimed the skull belonged to a collection of skeletons his father, Dr. Herbert E. Baumeister, maintained. Unquote. Herbert Baumeister would roam Indiana, frequenting gay bars and clubs, and gained the trust of lonely men who would last be seen with Herb and would never be seen alive again. Many men, they would go missing, vanishing without a trace. Now between May 28th and July 31st, three men, Johnny Bayer, Jeff Jones, and Richard Hamilton Jr., they all go missing, all believed to be victims of Baumeister's. Now remains would be found at Fox Hollow, and I mean, when I say remains, they found like over 10,000 body parts or pieces or bone. Just the number is haunting. And it would take a long time for some of these people to be identified. And some of those remains were actually identified as one of those three missing men that I just mentioned, Jeff Jones. To this day, Johnny and Richard, well, they remain missing people. Now the following year, this is now in 1994, three additional men, they go missing. Stephen Hale, Alan Broussard, and Roger Goodlett in less than a four-month period. And in March of 1995, Michael Kern, he goes missing as well. With the exception of Jeff Jones, of course, all of these men remain missing today. Then we have men that went missing and would eventually be discovered, like Jeff Jones, but it would take a very, very long time for them to be identified. Now, early August of 1993, just 1 week after Richard Hamilton Jr. went missing, a 27-year-old man named Alan Livingston, he would go missing. His remains, they would be found on Fox Hollow Farm. 3 years later, in 1996, after he had gone missing, but they would not be identified until October of 2023, You guys, that's 27 years later. 27 years his family was unsure of where he was. 27 years of maybe holding out hope that he was still alive and maybe just ran off, but no such luck. Now we're in early 1994 and Daniel Halloran vanishes. Remains are found at the farm, and 31 years after he was last seen, those remains are identified as Halloran by forensic genetic genealogy earlier this year, that being, of course, 2025. Manuel Resendez, he was last seen at an Indianapolis bar August 6th of 1993, the same day one of Baumeister's confirmed victims, who would later be identified, also went missing. So two men missing in one freaking day. That's creepy. Now, Manuel's remains would be discovered at the farm in 1996, but like the others, he would remain unidentified for several years, finally getting his name back 28 years later in 2024. With the advancements of DNA, nameless victims are getting their names back. We see this with the Fox Hollow Farm victims. We see this also with September 11th victims. We see this with people who are Jane Doe's from like 40 years ago, found, but nameless, getting their names back. It may take decades, but they are getting it back. And I have to ask, who will be next? Who? WRTV goes into more details about Baumeister. Quote, when Baumeister's wife and children left for summer vacations, police believe Baumeister picked up young men at gay bars, took them to his home, and strangled them to death. Investigators believe Baumeister burned the bodies, pulverized the bones, and disposed of most of the remains on parts of his 18-acre farm. Authorities found the remains of at least 25 people on Baumeister's property in 1996. Baumeister fled the country after he refused to talk to police who were investigating the missing men. When questioned by police, Baumeister's wife, Juliana, told investigators that one of their kids found a human skull on the farm in December 1994. Baumeister, she told investigators, told her the skull had been a medical specimen that belonged to his late father, who was an anesthesiologist, according to media reports. According to the Indianapolis Star, and other media, Baumeister 49 shot himself in the head in Pinery Provincial Park in Canada, July 3, 1996, and died before he could be arrested and put on trial for the killings at his home. He left a 3-page suicide note in which he apologized for spoiling the scenery of that Canadian park where he killed himself, and apologized for his failing marriage and crumbling businesses. The Indianapolis Star reported on July 6, 1996. His suicide note said nothing about the missing men and the bones found on his farm nearly 2 weeks prior, unquote. Now, I tried to look up that suicide note. From time to time, I've been successful in doing that, you know, even finding just a little part of it or whatever, but it has been kept hush-hush. I have had no luck, and apparently other people had looked for it too, as I could see, as I read comments on these different pages about how they couldn't find it either and how they were really wondering. But 3 pages, you had a lot to say, but it is interesting that he didn't have a word to say about the missing men. You know, and so obviously with him out of the picture, they were able to go at the location, Fox Hollow Farm, and that's where they unearthed just a plethora of evidence that points right to him, mind you. I mean, it's very, very sad, all of these people, and there are people still being identified to this day. So the missing men that I had mentioned before that have never been found, maybe they have been found, just it's taking a very long time. As we know, the past couple years, this year included, 2025, people are getting their names back. So we'll have to keep an ear out and see what happens next with that case. Now, starting back in 1980 and ending in 1991, another serial killer roamed these parts, known as the I-70 Strangler. Now, authorities firmly believe that Herbert Baumeister, he's responsible for these serial killings as well. Sadly, though, the serial killer, responsible for at least 12 deaths, remains officially unidentified to this very day. Murders unsolved. The Interstate 70 serial killings and Fox Hollow Farm murders have some similarities, definitely. Both sets of victims, they were all gay men. They all frequented the gay bar and club scene in Indianapolis in the same area, and they would last be seen at these bars. The I-70 victims were found dumped on the side of the road or in a ditch, like a piece of trash, sadly. Cause of death? Strangulation. Michael Petrie, he was the second youngest victim, only 16 years old, but he lived a very adult life as a prostitute. Man, I have to tell you, at 16 years old, I was riding go-karts with my sisters and cousins and friends. We were going horseback riding. We were playing Donkey Kong, 007, Mario. We were hanging with friends. We were swimming, reading books, hiking, exploring little caves. Those are things that kids do. Well, now today, kids just stare at their iPads and iPhones and whatever other device, Game Boys, whatever they have today. But back then, that's what we did. We went out there, we played outside, we got dirty. It was a fucking blast. But prostituting? Selling your body for money? No thank you. Never crossed my mind, ever. But anyways, to each their own, he is at a gay bar and would immediately after that go missing. However, the next like 2 or 3 days, people in town would actually see Michael riding in some random vehicle, shotgun, with some dude, unknown dude. And so he would eventually be found strangled to death June 16th, 1980. 2 years later, in 1982, Maurice Taylor, 23, he was a homeless man. He would frequent gay bars and offer sex for money to get by. He would be found strangled to death. Delvoid Baker, the youngest known victim, he was only 14 years old, like Michael Petrie. He was living an adult life and would meet up with guys at nearby gay bars where he would demand $20 for his services. Today in 2025, my friends, that's a few cents shy of $67. Michael Riley, 22 years old, is last seen at a nightclub in Indianapolis in the company of an unknown man in May of 1983. His body, well, it's found a few days later. Strangulation. Eric Roediger, 17 years old, vanishes in May of 1985 and later is found strangled. Michael Glenn, 29 years old, his body is found strangled to death and he would remain unidentified for over 3 years. James Robbins, 21, he goes missing for 2 days before his naked body surfaces. Like the others, he was strangled. In 1989, two men, Gene Talbot and Stephen Elliott, both 26, they're murdered, both found in Ohio, respectively in May and August. August the following year, now we're in 1990, Clay Boatman, 32 years old, a nurse, is last seen at a local gay bar and later found strangled. Thomas Clevenger Jr. vanishes the same month as Clay. And like Clay and the men before him, he too is found strangled. The last known I-70 victim was the oldest of the victims, 42-year-old Otto Becker. Which again, 42, that's not old. I mean, these were all young people. Witnesses placed him with two men right before going missing and ultimately, you guessed it, found strangled. Kind of makes you think, two men, like what's going on there? Were, like, was one innocent and didn't know what was happening? Or were there two serial killers? Or did these two men have nothing to do with it? No clue. Don't know. But during the investigation, four other strangulation victims would surface, known to frequent gay bars, and they too were found strangled, and they would be added to the list, bringing the number closer to 20. This location, it's believed to be highly haunted. And with everything that has happened here at Fox Hollow Farm, I would be shocked if it weren't haunted. So much death took place here. So many innocent people just brutally murdered. Cold spots have been experienced here, and oftentimes by the pool. This would be where many of the victims were murdered. Even on warm days, people in the area have experienced being chilled to the bone at this location, the pool. And speaking of the pool, people have seen ripples in the pool when no one is in it or near it. They've heard a splash when it is empty. Now that's creepy. Disembodied voices and footsteps have been heard throughout the property. One thing truly heartbreaking to me, I mean, this is all heartbreaking, obviously, is that people, paranormal investigators, they have captured EVPs of men crying out for help. I mean, to me, it's agonizing to think that these men, these tortured souls, are forever trapped in their own private hell right here, hoping someday, if possible, they can find peace and be released from the hell that they are absolutely stuck in. I quote ParanormalCaseFiles.com. Quote, witnesses have reported seeing shadowy figures inside the home and throughout the woods. One frequently seen apparition is that of a shirtless man, believed to be one of the victims. He's been spotted near the woods and occasionally inside the house. Others say they've seen Herb Baumeister's figure in windows or walking the property at night.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others, they are all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single damn one yet? No need to cry about it, just hit up any of those phenomenal podcast platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Deezer, CastBox, Downcast. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week.